Well, my name is Paul Stanley, just so you know who is leading this. My background is Europe, being with the Navigators 11 years over there, and had the opportunity of working in Eastern Europe and then in Western Europe, and finally we kept seeing God raise up Europeans to take over, and we worked ourselves out of a job. And my last responsibility was for all of Europe. And then we've come back to the States about a year ago, a little over a year ago, and returned to our homeland. And now we're responsible for the eastern one-third of the United States with our staff over there. But the subject of leadership has been a fascination with me and something that I've studied for years and years at this point, 22 years to be exact. I graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point, where leadership was a premium. And ever since that point, I've just been fascinated with the subject. And I've watched a lot of leaders serve with a lot of great ones, served under some great ones, served under some poor ones. And it's just been a tremendous experience, and I'm like you, feel like I'm still learning, and I'm very much of a novice. But the subject we're going to talk about today, I feel, is probably one of the most important aspects of a leader's life, and that is the whole area of accountability. It started out when I was 35 years old. For those of you who might not know what age I am, that was 10 years ago. And I got a birthday card. Oh, let's see. Do we have any extra seats here? Okay, a couple of them here. And make sure you pick up one of these. They got away from me. But are there any blank sheets? Oh, here they are. Hey, there are plenty of them here. We'll just send them around. Can you send those down there, please? Did you get one? And I think behind you there. Okay. Good, there are a couple of them there. Try one more here. Okay, there are a couple extra seats, and if you don't, actually, we could probably get some seats. Matt, could you just check and see if there are any extra seats back there, or would you rather sit there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, good, fine. You'll need one of these, so if you don't have one, just grab a hold of it. Let me just send it back to the corner in the back here, and so if anyone else comes in, you can just hand that to them. As I started to say, about 10 years ago when I turned age 35, someone sent a birthday card to me and said, "Congratulations, Paul, you've made it halfway. May the second half be greater than the first." And what he was referring to is the Bible refers to the full life of 70, 70 years. I'm halfway there. I got to thinking about that because it was said in jest, but I began to think about how significant the comment was. And I thought, knowing now what I know in my own life, professionally, my background, I have an understanding of my gifts, an understanding of who I am to a certain degree. Certain things have happened. My family is together. They're growing. This next 35 could be the most significant years of my life, professionally, spiritually, family-wise, in every aspect. So I began to study that next year, that 36th year, what is it that will help men make it? Because I knew a lot of men who started out well but finished poorly. I had the opportunity of working on public relations and admissions with the United States Military Academy in one of my assignments a number of years earlier than that. And I met a lot of men who, if you've read about the history of our country, a number of these men were there. And I sat and talked with them. They were men who were basically 10, 15 years before they retired, in many ways were finished. I met with men who had faced moral decay. Since that time, getting involved in spiritual or full-time Christian work, I've met a number of pastors, leaders of organizations who have wound up being placed to the side because something happened in their life. And that really concerned me. So as I made this study, I began to read biographies and stories and accounts of people's lives. Men the women who made it and some who didn't, who finished well. I began to do studies in the Bible and keep notes in a journal. And as I studied, I began to see some threads. And the threads were not very many, but there were some significant ones. Things that could help me make it to year 70 and finish well, still going up, whether it be professionally, whether it be personally, spiritually. But of course, the spiritual, the inner core, the who I am is the key. And so I saw in the lives of several of these men the whole area of accountability. I could almost bring you to case by case illustration of men who were and were not accountable and what happened to their lives. Many of you know some quite well-known men in the evangelical circles who have been asked to leave their jobs recently because of morality, a divorce, or a problem. Where did it start? Did it start right then? Or did it start some years before? I travel a great deal, as many of you do, and I meet a lot of people on the airplane. Once we're in the conversation and chatting about what he does and what I do, I've asked him, I said, you know, I've been fascinated with areas of leadership. Tell me, one area that has been very, very interesting to me is this whole area of relationships, close relationships of men, because the statistics show that 8 out of 10 men do not even have a close friend. So, what do you do in that area? I said, let me just ask it more specifically. If you had a problem, if you were struggling, something more personally in your own life, and you only had 20 cents or a credit card or whatever it'd be, who would you call? Would you have someone to call? And I meet man after man who has no one to call. No one to really bear his heart to and open himself to. And this is true also among some of our women. So I began to really get serious about this subject of accountability because I find that up and down the line, it's a tremendous subject. Solzhenitsyn said, "The only man to fear is one that no longer feels himself accountable to God." We know, and we can give illustration, of people throughout history who didn't sense accountability to God. But where does that accountability start? How does God work? Well, one of the things I've learned in my own pilgrimage and trying to put things together is that God is trying to build a man after his own heart, make a man to become like Christ. And so we are, in a sense, accountable to God and very clearly for all the things that he has for us. And so we sense there is a direct accountability there as we come back to what God's given us, what we know, all that we have. But I meet people, as a matter of fact, not long ago, just was with a pastor, and I asked him, "Who do you sense accountability to?" He says, "Only one person." I said, "Who's that?" He said, "God." I said, "But how does that work? How do you know? How in our hearts can be very deceitful. How do you know what to do with that? How do you keep accountable?" He says, "Well, I pray and I let the Spirit of God lead me." It was very interesting. A year after I had this conversation with him, he left his pastorate with a great problem. He was asked to leave. And I see how God throughout history takes people and uses them in our life to hold, as they hold us accountable, as we're accountable together, even some of the things that Swindoll was saying about the accountability of the family, as they hold us accountable, ultimately back to God, hold us and help us to be accountable to God, it's the men and women around us very often that will keep us and teach us the lessons we need to know. So the subject of accountability, in my experience, has been tremendously important. So on these handout sheets I have with you here, I have listed some things, that some questions. What is accountability? Now, what's really interesting, if you look in Webster's or some of these, a very credible dictionary, you'll find that accountability is not listed, at least in the direct, all the ones I checked into. Accountable is, or account, in many of these aspects. But this is a new word, basically, that's coming upon us, and particularly in the sense in which we're speaking. What is accountability? Anybody want to give a crack at it? I didn't realize that so many would be here, but how many? What would be essential elements of accountability in your mind? When you think of accountability, what words pop in your mind? Okay, verify the truth, yes.
Discipline.
Discipline. On whose part?
On the person that's trying to get accountability.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Justify.
Justify.
Responsibility.
Responsibility. Okay.
Perseverance.
Perseverance. In what way?
You have to work at it.
You mean work at it to keep accountable with someone or in... Mm-hmm. Excellent. Good observation.
Regularity,
uh-huh.
Submission.
Well, that's a loaded word today. Okay. Let me try to pull these words together as I've seen them, and all of them are hitting right at it. Accountability. To be held answerable for something to someone. And the word answerable can be substituted with the word responsible. Someone had mentioned that. To be held responsible, answerable, for something, to someone. Now, all of you men are men of business, men of responsibility. You know what that means. In many of the management books and leadership books that I've read, that's one of the big problems of today, is many people don't know what they're accountable for. Or even to whom they're accountable. The one book that's running all around is the book One Minute Manager. Just a simple concept. And yet, from what I understand and the feedback and talking to some of the men who wrote that, their team, they had given a seminar over in Europe that I attended. They say the response has been tremendous, but it's simple. Outlining what I'm accountable for, and to whom I'm accountable. But that's our basic definition. Now, what are the some things that we're talking about? What are some of the some things? What would you say? Any thoughts on that? What are the some of the some things up there? Excuse me?
The bottom line.
The bottom line, okay. Wherever that might be.
Mm-hmm. Spiritual, personal.
Okay.
Body, soul, and spirit.
A body, soul, and spirit. Okay.
Job description.
All right, a job description. Mm-hmm. What else?
Integrity.
Okay, integrity. Anything else?
Consistency.
A consistency, perhaps in following through on what we've committed ourselves to. We can put in the Word of God. We can put in goals that we're committed to. The gifts that we have. The knowledge that we have, the possessions, and the things that God has given to us as stewards. How about the some ones? Who are the some ones? Who could be some of the some ones in our life? Excuse me?
Family.
Family, okay. Who else? Excuse me? Stock, okay, stockholders, if it's a corporation. Uh-huh.
The boss.
The boss, mm-hmm.
Employees.
Employees, in other words, downward. Very interesting, mm-hmm. Very good as well. That certainly is a biblical concept as well, that we are responsible, we are accountable to those who we lead.
To ourselves.
To ourselves, okay. To ourselves. We've already talked about to God.
Those are helping, those are helping us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that can fit in many different areas. The some things, the some ones. That's basically a definition of it. But then, why accountability? We've hit on some of those things. Why accountable? K, Accountability is an important subject, as we've talked about it. And particularly in this day and age, we find that one of the things that's being encouraged is the man who stands alone, the man who has a great capacity to do things himself. But in the last 10 years, that theory, even in the secular world, is starting to erode. If those of you who have watched and read over the last 20 years the books of management, starting with some of the earlier ones, and even in Drucker himself, as he began to write, you'll see that we started with this concept. I know back about almost 25 years ago, when I began to learn leadership at the United States Military Academy, it was the self-sufficient single leader who stood alone. It was the great MacArthur who needed no one else, except when he wouldn't listen to anyone else in Korea. And eventually, it was his downfall. And many other leaders, the Patton, who stood by himself and could drive on and order people around and all the rest, until you get into his personal life and you find a tragedy there. And it was almost a service to Patton himself that he didn't live after World War II, because probably they wouldn't have known what to do with him. And you find that there were these images, there were these people, there were these models that were men who stood alone. Well, Hitler himself. Yeah, could take the other direction, exactly. But that is not the case today, and you'll read that a great deal of where present management concepts is more of a participatory decision-making, being open, being involved, but it's still not getting down to where we're talking about and the importance, particularly in the spiritual realm. The area of accountability. Why accountable? Why is it important for you and for me? Let's just touch on some things that I have found to be important, and any time you want to contribute or say something or ask a question, please do. Why accountable? The first one is protection. There are just two primary points. First one is protection. And Hebrews 3, 12 and 13 are key. Let me just read that for you. It says this: "See to it, brothers, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. But encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness." Jeremiah 17:9 says that the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked, and who can know it? We don't know our own hearts. Although we may try, and although we may pray, we will get insights, but we will not know our own hearts. And somehow, in the heart of the man, a lot is put in about this whole area of pride. It's hard. And we all laughed, I guess it was last night when Lauren was speaking of things, and then, of course, when Chuck Swindoll read that article from Redbook by Stewart, was so true, wasn't it? And that's probably what a lot of us laughed about. Is that image, that not opening yourself. Not opening yourself to allow other people in to help hold you accountable. Keeping yourself open. Now, why do you think that is today? Why is it hard to be open to accountability? Why do you think so?
Purported to be weakness.
Okay, it's purported to be a weakness, all right?
Fear of failure.
Fear of failure in the eyes of these people looking in, okay? And over here?
Get pride.
Being vulnerable, making ourselves
not wanting to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Okay. Somehow that idea has come across so strongly to us, hasn't it? And the importance then of just being able to open ourselves and be vulnerable.
Are you saying why not be accountable is because of protection?
Excuse me?
Is that what I hear you saying? Why
no.
Not be accountable is
no.
Because of
I'm saying
why, accountable?
Why be accountable? That's right. Thank you for that. Yeah, the clarification. Why accountability? First of all, we need protection. Okay. We need protection from the effects of sin. Now, what are the effects of sin here? Sin hardens the heart. When we sin and don't deal with it correctly, a slight hardening of the heart occurs. This makes us less and less aware of the convicting ministry of the Holy Spirit within us. This increasing hardness produces an increasing probability of further sin. And that's why Hebrews 3, 12 and 13, particularly 13, says, if you see a brother, if you see him struggling, if you see him moving into sin, we need to come together, hold him accountable to be obedient to God. Secondly, sin can deceive us. Sin makes us increasingly unaware of our own true condition. We become cold in our own faith and aren't even aware what is happening. And I already quoted Jeremiah 17:9, that our heart is deceitful and desperately wicked, and we really don't know it. And others can help us. We don't know that.
Drop back to when you see a brother, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You just touched on a very difficult thing in my life.
Okay.
How do you relate to this? I mean, we're skipping over it just like it's automatic.
I'll be coming back to that. And if I don't hit that well enough for what you're looking for, I'd appreciate if you'd ask that question again. What his question basically was is, how about a brother who we see in sin and needs to be confronted? That's an area of accountability. So if we're out there and we see this and we need protection and we don't have it, we're in trouble. Because what happens often, sin comes in with this two-pronged attack, begins to take effect. And if we are alone in our own Christian walk, the above process begins to take effect, and our chances of victory are slim. Now, I've talked to some men who have struggled. Take this one pastor who was actually a pastor I was associated with. I had left the country, and I was gone, but I knew him. He was very effective. Very effective in his ministry. As a matter of fact, he was working among the young people, the college and career and high school kids, to the point that the groups was numbering about 100. They are involved in strong discipleship. He himself desired to learn more and more. And every time I came back from Europe and swung by, he would spend hours. He'd be so eager to learn. If I need to go to the airport, he'd say, I'll take you, and we'll just get some more hours together. And God was really using this young man. He's married and had two children. All of a sudden, as a matter of fact, just let me back up. Several times he said to me, he says, you know, the one thing I miss is having a buddy that I could really talk to and kind of bear my heart with. And he said, I had tried to do this with the pastor, but he's older. And he said, you know, that's really not the way I operate. And so he said, we'll talk and pray together. But he said, I can't be that kind of buddy to you. And so he looked around. He kept shopping and kept talking to people to find out if there was another man who would be interested in that. Suddenly, my brother gave me a call, who was very closely associated with this church. He said, you won't believe what just happened. I said, what's that? He said, the assistant pastor, Bob, just ran off with one of the college girls that he's ministering to. And I said to him myself, well, how'd that happen? So I asked him, what happened? He says, no one knows. All of a sudden, it was there. And so as I probed further and talked, there was a little bit that he knew. But when I got back, I got a hold of several of the elders and the pastor. And I said, did you see anything that was going on in Bob's life? I said, oh, well, yeah, he was having some marital struggles. He and his wife were not getting along real well, and they're working through some things. I said, did anybody do anything or say anything? He said, well, yeah, the church paid for him to go to a marriage counselor and go to a marriage seminar. I said, did it help? He says, well, I don't know. I guess it didn't. Then I talked to one elder and I said, did you know that what was going on in the youth group? Because you're supposed to oversee the youth group a little bit and the activities. And he said, well, yeah. He said the girl that he ran off with came from a broken home. And he was doing a lot of counseling with her. I said, uh-huh. That old formula, you know, the old attraction of one who has desperate needs and needs to be listened to and can someone to show interest. And here this fellow Bob was showing that interest. So it didn't start overnight. And so that thought, and with the problems of the family and the marital struggle, before you know it, opportunity came and bang, they left. It didn't happen overnight. Very few things do. But had he been in an accountable relationship, he would not have been deceived by the sin that was going on in his mind and even in his actions that he was taking. Sin would not have hardened his heart and he wouldn't have tried to justify it. You see, we can't deal with sin mentally because our minds will always justify. We've got to deal with things and deal with sin in a more direct way. But we're left to ourselves, we'll always justify it. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 and 10 says this, two are better than one, for they have a good reward for their labor. But woe unto him who is alone when he falls, for he has not another to pick him up. So when I ask some of these men, do you have anybody? Very few have them. Who would pick you up? Who would have the freedom and access to your life to point out something that's going wrong? Because we live in a very active world today. You take a look at the book of Acts and the way things were going and that church was growing in the Jerusalem when it first started in chapter 2 and then on to 3 and 4 and it was 3,000, 5,000. It was growing day and night. And one of the beautiful things about it is that people, neighbors, were watching other neighbors come to know Christ and having their lives changed. And so also businessmen were responsible more with each other. So if there was a man who took care of making sandals down here, he met Christ and someone came in and said, hey, I don't like the job you did. And then he says, let me take it back. I'm awful sorry. And let me do it over again. And so he does. He takes it back. He does it over again. And he says, you know, I'm sure sorry. And if you bring in any sandals in again, I'll do a better job. Guy says, gee whiz, something's changed. He goes down the way and talks to his other friend. He says, you know what just happened with John the cobbler? He said, and he relates the incident. He says, you know what? I've watched his family too. He says, his kids go right near the synagogue and I watch them and things are happening. And you know that family used to be just wild, arguing, all the thing. The kids were not responsive. But something's happened in that home. I'm watching it. And there was a sense of accountability because we all live together. But now we need more of that because we all get in our cars and go different directions. I attend a church right now, and as much as I try to get involved, I teach a Sunday school class, I'm getting to know people. But all during the week, I could cheat. I could pull bad deals. I could do all kinds of things. I could beat my wife and yell at my kids. But when I showed up on Sunday to teach a Sunday school class and straighten up, no one else would know. Because none of them see me during the other 6.5 days. And you see, that's the dangerous part of this whole area and where men are finding themselves. We move, we fly, we go fast, we come home late, we're tired, we don't have relationships. It costs to do that. And so we live a life in many respects in the inner life very much alone. And that's the part that's difficult. Well, that's in a sense, the negative side, but here is the positive side, the other area. Why accountability? Because this is where we get encouragement and stimulation. Still in the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, verses 24 and 25, says this.
What was that?
Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. Mm-hmm. Sorry. My eyes are going here. And this book is getting smaller. And let us consider how we may spur or stir or encourage one another toward love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, as is the habit of some, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Encouragement and stimulation, vital needs for our own lives. It's another passage, Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, So the countenance of one man sharpens another. You get with those kind of people who stir you. Who encourages you today? I was standing with one man one time who does a great deal of speaking and moving around different circles, and I said to him, "Who encourages you?" He said, "You know, it's interesting. I don't have many who do. Most of the time when I get together with people, even other Christian brothers, we talk about the problems of the church. We talk about the problems of evangelicalism. Or we talk about the problems of the economy." But he said, "There are few people who really encourage my life, my walk with God, my trying to grow. Few people who do that. I don't know why that is. But somehow, there's very little of that encouragement." I find in my own life, even though I have gone through navigator training and know to do a lot of things, I find if I'm not around some men who are of like heart, committed to do that, I don't do well. For instance, scripture memory. I don't know whether you men feel you're successful at it, but unless I'm with a number of other men, I don't do well with it. And so I get myself in an accountable relationship where we can keep stirring one another. And so when I was over in Bonn, Germany, living in Bonn, Germany, the capital of West Germany, we started a little group. And it turned out to be just two other men who I found were Christians. They were both businessmen, both executives. And I asked them, "Do you feel you're growing at the level that you really would like to?" And they said, "Well, no." And I said, "You know, I don't feel I am either. Could we get together a little accountability group and just start encouraging one another to keep growing?" And so they said that would be great. So all we did was committed ourselves to memorizing one verse a week, come together at early morning Saturday for breakfast, share some of the things that are going on in our life, and then share that verse. And we'd say that verse. Well, it was a little awkward at first because these other two men had never memorized scripture. So we got in, and the first time the one fellow said, "Well, let's see, I've got it generally." And so he kind of quoted his own translation. And so I said to him, "Well, now, if we're going to hold each other accountable and really do well here, we ought to hold ourselves accountable to do it right. You feel that?" And he said, "Well, yeah." "Well, then let's really go to make it word perfect." "Well, which translation? Makes no difference. Just let's make it word perfect." So we did. And so we set a little standard and we'd really hold each other up. Well, their greatest excitement was catching me in mistakes because I was supposed to be the professional. I was the guy who... But I did make mistakes. And then we started to review the back weeks. And that really humbled us all. But we started to do this. As we talked about these verses and asked, "Hey, how do we apply this to our life?" Some things started to come out. And so the door began to open in our own lives to a little bit more vulnerability. A little bit more of where we were. One fella, the group grew. One fella was the ambassador from Canada, there in Germany. And he was growing, moving along, and all of a sudden, one day, he says, "You know, I'm really struggling with an issue." And we were wondering whether it had to do with the United Nations or the Europe economic crisis or whatever it was. But he shared a personal struggle he was having in his own life. He said, "You know, being a diplomat all my life and struggling with this, my wife and I don't have a lot of good communication." And he says, "I've been trying to have this little quiet time and letting it, you know, start out, and I'm just really not doing well." And he says, "You know, if you guys would just pray for me." So we all said, "Oh, sure, yeah, we'll pray." And, you know, we kind of took that seriously. Because that week he was going to have a quiet time every morning. He was going to try to. And he was going to begin to start spending time with his wife, just talking. Because some of the things that he deals with and at his level, his wife is really not interested in. So they've developed a lifestyle where he has his work, she does hers, and they don't talk much about it. They don't have a lot to talk about. But he wanted to move in this area because God was putting it on his heart. Well, that week went by, and we all came back in happy. I had traveled that week, and something else had happened, and we got together again, and all of a sudden, while we were just starting breakfast, he looked up, and he said, "Can you guys pray for me this week?" And I said, yeah, I prayed once. I said, "What happened?" And he dropped his head, and he says, "The worst week I've ever had." I said, "What do you mean?" Everybody kind of held to their fork, and he said, "Well, first of all, I tried to have a quiet time, and it just seemed like everything went wrong, and by Tuesday, I just said, phooey." And he says, "Then I tried to have some time talking to my wife, and you know what we wound up doing? Arguing." He said, "I tried to come back at it a second time, and we argued again." Not only that, but he said, "My one son came home, and he said, I struggled with him." He says, I don't know, maybe I ought to just punt the whole Christian life. It really can't work." And all of a sudden, the message got through to the guys around us, all of us. And we really felt bad. And we started to talk about this. And as a result of his opening himself and being so vulnerable, suddenly several of the other men began to open themselves. And we started to commit really ourselves to pray for one another seriously and keep calling each other. Well, by this time, there are 11 men in the group. And that next week, guess how many phone calls he got during the week? He must have gotten over 25 calls. Everybody kept calling. "How you doing? What's going on? Did you have your quiet time this morning? Hey, I've been praying for you. Have you tried to get that time?" He says, "Yeah, well, I'm going away Wednesday. Pray for Wednesday, and my wife and I are going to spend that time." "Great, do that, and we'll pray for it." And they became actively involved in his life. That next week, everybody, we couldn't wait to get to breakfast to find out how he did. We got there, and he was a little bit late. He no sooner came in, everybody stopped and looked at him, and the first question they want to know is, "How did it go?" And he smiled, and he said, "I'm not telling you." Everybody said, "Hey, come on, come on," after we laughed. And he started to tell us what happened. Well, he didn't have it all 7 days, but 5 days he had quiet times, and they really touched his heart. He really just met with the Lord and had great times. As a result of it, he shared several things that affected decisions and relationships he had during the week. Then he started to talk about the times he had with his wife, and they've agreed to do certain things together, and they're starting to develop. And of course, it can't be done over a week, but some encouraging steps were taken. And that continued on. And real issues. Sometimes we had one lawyer in our group, and he was struggling with an issue none of us knew anything about. But because he felt he needed to share it, he shared the struggle it was because it was a moral issue. Now, I don't know how they are here, but over in Europe, good lawyers are racketeers to a certain degree, because they're always wheeling and dealing, some of the system, particularly defense lawyers. And he was a defense lawyer. And boy, I tell you, he told me some of the things he got into. Well, our hair almost stood end. I mean, we were wondering how in the world he stayed out of jail because of some of the deals and things he's done. And he looked up and he says, "Do you realize the struggle this has caused me?" He says, "I'm defending a guy I know is as guilty as can be." But he says, "I know how to get him off." And he says, "I don't know what to do. Do I drop the case?" Because he says, "If I win this case..." He was probably considered about the third or fourth top lawyer in Germany, defense lawyer. He said, my reputation is through. And he said, "I know in my heart I'm wrong, but what do I do?" And boy, we prayed. We really prayed. And some interesting things came out of it. I'll maybe tell you later what happened. But but that's where it is. That's where it takes place. So that's why accountability. Now, I think we touched a little bit. Let me just stop for a moment. Any questions on that at all, or any other thoughts? I think what I'd like to do is, since we're running short, the real heart of what I want to share a lot with you is on the back sheet. this little figure. I don't know whether you realize what that is, but it's called accountability relationships. I'd like to just spend a little bit of time with that, because that, in essence, is how you can pull it off. And it's the thing that you can shoot for in your own life. And I have found this to be imperative for me. Let me show you what I mean. This is you or me. We're in the middle. And we have the opportunity of having relationships. And let me just talk, first of all, about this vertical relationship. This is the relationship I call the Paul-Timothy relationship. Now, those of you who are familiar with Paul and Timothy, Paul was the great apostle. He was traveling through on one of his journeys and mission journeys. And, of course, in the book of Acts, this documents that. He sees this young man named Timothy along the way and picks him up. And he came from a Christian home, but there was obviously something about him because many people talked about him. And he picked up Timothy and he started to help him grow. And they had a very close relationship. And I find that in my own life, in all of our lives, we all need either Timothy's or we need Paul's in our life. And that relationship shifts as we mature. Let me show you what I mean. I feel, first of all, down on this level here, I call the basics. This is where a lot of that emphasis is. Now, Paul wrote to Timothy, and he said in 2 Timothy 2:2, "And the things which you've heard from me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who be able to teach others also." And so what he had done, Paul had taken Timothy, and Paul taught him all that he knew. He taught him many things about the Word of God, the revelations he had had, the applications about government, about relationships, about marriage, about everything that he had learned from the Lord himself. And so then when he finished, he said, "Timothy, you should take someone else and do the same." I find that in my own life, I need to have some Timothys in my life. I need to be helping someone grow. And that's where I am stimulated and I continue to grow in the basics. Every one of us need that. There might be some young men around and couples that perhaps you and your wife could work on together. But what happens when that goes on is that in this relationship, as I'm sharing this with him, what's happening to me? It strengthens me.
Before you show, you have to know it.
That's right. Before I can do anything or pass on him, I've got to keep going. It's just like that little group I started over in Bonn to help me keep going in scripture memory and keep in the Bible. So it's a two-way street. It helps them and helps a person grow, but it also keeps me stimulated. Right now, for instance, as I got back here, I'm meeting with this one 22-year-old student. And he's really an eager young fella. And he wanted to grow, and he's become a Christian earlier, but he had never really grown. And we're meeting together each week, and we meet at 6 o'clock in the morning because he's got an unbelievable schedule. He has a 40-hour week, and plus he's taking a full 16 hours of courses, and he's just a real go-getter. He has, in that relationship, he has really impacted my own life. He has stirred me to keep growing. I can't show up with not having prepared my lesson, not having had some good quiet times, because you know what he does? I've been asking him, "How's the quiet time going? Share with me a few things." And then he asks me, "Well, how are you doing? What did you get out of it? What have you been learning?" Last week, for instance, we're going through Jerry Bridges' book, Pursuit of Holiness. And we're taking chapter at a time and doing a little Bible study with it as well. And it's really exciting. And he, of course, is 22 and he's not married and he's just wrestling with all these things. And all of a sudden we're talking about him and his desire to be pure and all the rest. And he turns to me and he says, "Now, how are you doing in that area?" And I said, "Well, I struggle with that area." He says, "Really? guy your age? I said, well, I think it was more of an encouragement for him. But I assured him that at any age, as a matter of fact, Lauren Sandy, just a couple years ago, and he's well in his 60s, and he was going off to a trip to Asia, and I was with him, and I said to him, how can I pray for you? He says, pray first of all that I'll keep my thought life pure. And I almost dropped my pen. I said, really? He said, really. Just pray that. So I guess the rest of the voyage, that's where it is. But see, we need that kind of questions and need these kind of things. I remember giving a message on the importance of multiplication and that we all need to have a man that we're this very thing here. And this one young man came up to me after the message and he said, I just wanted to ask you one question. Who's your man? Who are you meeting with? So we didn't have an accountable relationship in that sense, but he was willing to come and keep me accountable. So we need that. Well, then as we get older, we still need Pauls in our life, but not in the same way he tells us to do this and tells us to do that, and we do it, and we're teaching in a kind of the teacher-student relationship. But what happens is this up here becomes more of the level of counsel. The level of counsel. Now, Psalm 1:1 challenges us to walk, to not walk in the counsel of the ungodly. The reverse of that, to walk in the counsel of the godly. You remember the passage, that was Psalm 1:1. Exodus 18, where Jethro, the father-in-law, watched Moses in his frustration try to judge all these people, and they're lining up and they're becoming dissatisfied and discouraged because they all couldn't get to him. And he advised him, you need to delegate. You need to find other judges and to help you. So he needed the counsel. Paul later became that to Timothy. You can read that in 1 Timothy 4 through 6, the last three chapters there, 4, 5, and 6. So these men become counselors to our life. In my life, I have five of them. I've actually gone to them, each one, and it's come over a period of years. And I've gone to them and I said, would you be a counselor to me on the long haul? And what I mean by that is that I'll keep you informed of what's going on in my own life as much as possible. But on major decisions and areas of my life and perhaps touching base now and then, if you would really help me. And in any major decision I've made and many of these other things that I've done, I've referred to these people. They've kept check with me. I know that I could call any one of those five, for instance, and had I just stepped into sin that would be embarrassing to all of us, I know that I could call them and they would not leave me. They would stay with me. They would help me through it. And I know there's that relationship. So I feel that this vertical axis here, the Paul Timothy, is vital to my growth, the keeping involved in it. But it's not just the vertical axis that's important. I find it's the horizontal axis also. And I liken this to the Jonathan David, King David, back in the Old Testament. Now, if you want to read about that relationship, you can go back to Samuel. And we can pick up on how Jonathan, even though he was the heir to the throne, continued to love David. And just the passage there that you could pick up on there is in 1 Samuel 20, chapter 20. He loved him. He cared for him. They had a relationship that Jonathan himself, even though he was the son of Solomon, the heir to the throne, was willing to give that up for David. There was a deep relationship. There's a commitment to one another. And I find that it's on this horizontal level that this area of Hebrews that we talked about before, 3, 12, and 13 take effect. That if we begin to see another brother falling in sin, we need to get in on it. We need to speak to the things that are personal in our own life. We find out here where we can be held accountable to how I live and how a lot of my inner life. Because this group up here in the vertical part, they won't see me enough. They won't be around. But the group down here that I'm meeting with, very often they're not the ones who will ask those kind of personal questions. They're learning from me or from you, and so they're not so free to challenge certain areas of my life. How I spend my money, how I treat my family, how I'm setting priorities in the use of my time. So it's this horizontal axis that does that. Now, let me just give you an illustration of that, and then I'd like to open up for some questions as well. When I was traveling a great deal, and I was meeting with two men, Bob and Tom, in Bonn, who God had brought us together and given us this kind of relationship. And any time I was in town or they were in town, we always met, and we always set it up, and whether it was a breakfast or whether it was a time together or late at night, and we began to grow, and after about 2 or 3 years, this relationship became very strong. One time a week, I had been gone over a weekend, and my second oldest son was on the varsity basketball team, and he was doing well, and he was a junior. And they had played against a very important, in a very important game, and against the real rival in their league. And they had won, and it was quite a game. And I wasn't there. Tom was there, and Tom is a very outgoing, sanguine. He's very enthusiastic, and he probably yelled twice as loud and took up my place. But he watched that game and watched my boy play, and apparently my son Paul had done well. After it was over, the gymnasium was just filled with ecstatic excitement and cheering and yelling. And so Tom worked his way down to the court and looked over and saw my son. Of course, my son knows him well because he was over our house all the time, and they know of our close relationship, and he knows my family well, Tom did. And Tom just hugged Paul, and they kind of jumped up and down in the middle of the floor. And he says, "Hey, is your dad here?" He had forgotten that I was gone. And he said, and so Paul said, "Oh, no, he's not here. He's had to go on a last-minute trip to Scandinavia." He said, "Oh, okay." He says, "But boy, what a great game." And they went on and talked. Well, after it was over and the weekend passed and I came back on Monday, and Tuesday morning we got together for breakfast and we were chatting. And he said, "Hey, did you talk to your son about that game?" And I said, "Yeah, I heard it was a terrific game." He said, "Yeah, I saw it." And he told me about how well Paul did. And he was as proud as I would have been. And all of a sudden he looked at me and he says, "You know, I just wish you were there." I said, I couldn't be. I would have loved to. You know my commitment." And he said, I said to him, "Well, I just would have loved to have been there." He said, he kind of hesitated and he said, "Well, I know. He says, "I know you and Phyllis pray about your schedule and you try to, really keep track of that." And I said, "Tom, is there something you want to say?" He's "Nah, nah." He says, "I know that, I said, "Tom, if you're something you need to tell me," I said, "is there some problem that with Paul or something like that?" And he said, "Well," he said, and here it was. This was being tested right here. Because as I look back later, how I reacted was going to tell how free he was to approach my life again. So I said to him, "Tom, if you're holding something back that you feel I need to hear, you're not helping me." He says, "Well, it's just a hunch, but let me tell you." He says, "When I said to Paul, 'Is your dad here?' that look in his face said, 'He's gone again. He's not there.'" And I said, "What do you mean, Tom?" He says, "Paul, I think you're traveling too much. I think you're not sensitive enough to your kids to be home when they need you." He says, "Now, I know you need to travel." He says, "But you better be there." I said, "Well, Tom, what would you suggest?" He says, "I think you need to talk to him." So I went home, and I got a hold of Paul. And I said to Paul, "Paul, I just had a good talk with Tom. And, I think He's right. I think I've been traveling too much, and especially, you know, at certain occasions. What do you think? He says, oh, Dad, I know. He says, you know, I just, it's the way God, you know, it's the business, and that's what you're in, and God's called you to do that, and you have to travel. And I said, son, am I traveling too much for your, what you think? He said, well, yeah. I said, well, how could you help me? You know, I said, you know, I plan ahead most of the time. So I said, is there something I should know? Well, we had one of the best talks. He told me that, Dad, I don't mind you traveling a lot because you've got to do that. But he said, be home for certain times. Certain times. I said, could you help me know those certain times? He said, sure. So he helped me know. He helped me learn. And he told me in advance, as much as he could, when those certain times were. Well, it really was terrific because it saved me. But Tom got into my life. Now, what would have happened if I would have said to Tom as he shared that with me? I said, well, I appreciate that, Tom. I know you're really concerned about me, and I'll pray about it. And I kind of gave him a little bit of a stiff arm. Probably would have been the last time Tom would have shared that. Why? Why is it? Why is it it's hard for us to share something that important? Ever given some thought to that? Well, pride and just, we're just not used to being vulnerable. And when I share something that intimate with you, who's on the line as well as you? I am. Because I really like you. And we have a relationship. But if I say something, you know, I was going to buy a car. And what was really funny, I was sitting in a group that were, I had just come back here to the States, and they'd asked me to just share a little bit of what God's doing in some of the places. I just had come back from Africa, and so I was telling what God was doing there. And so we got, you know, there's five or six men there, and all of them were very successful in their business. And they were developing a closer relationship, and they wanted to know more about this. So we're talking, and I talked about Africa and all the rest. And so then one of them said, hey, let me bounce something off you guys. He said, I'm in the throes of buying a Mercedes or buying something else. He said, any of you guys have any thoughts on that? Well, here was these other guys. Almost all of them had the same kind of cars. So they all said, oh, man, it's a good car. Oh, yeah. So then he looked at me and says, what do you think, Paul? I said, oh, I come from a land where there's so many of them over there, they're great cars. But my only question would be not the car, but what are you doing with that money? Could you get along with less? I said, I could tell you two or three places that an investment of $10,000 would mean hundreds coming to know Christ. And all of a sudden, the whole room got quiet. And I realized I was kind of out of turn here, you know. So I said to him, I said, you know, listen, I'm not attacking you guys at all. I said, I'm just telling you where it is. But I said, you know, maybe you guys need to talk about that. Have you ever really talked about lifestyle together? Not in lifestyle as compared to each other, but lifestyle in comparison to the needs of the world and the gospel. And you know, it was really exciting because I got a letter about 3 weeks later, and some of these guys got into it. And you know, it's never before had they ever talked about that kind of thing. You see, they would talk about things, and no one's felt the freedom to really address it. And I talked to one of them later, and they said, you know, I really would like to say something like that, but I don't feel the freedom. Well, because we weren't at a level yet that Jonathan David trust had not developed, where they couldn't really confront each other in their own personal life. But let me just tell you, and then we can open up for some questions, practical ones or whatever. But as one develops this, the two-directional relationship here in your life, you are pinned in, and you're going to make it. Because there are men that have gone before us who probably have more capacity and were more spiritual than you and I. But yet, they didn't make it. Because I really believe they were not open in their life and they didn't have accountable relationships. And I find that when somebody has this, they will make it. They will make it. Because people will keep them in, keep them going. This relationship will keep them walking and stimulating. This will give them the counsel and direction and care for them and pray for them. And this one will keep them moving in their own personal life and the inner life and keep them away from sin and try as much as possible someone can do from outside. And as that relationship becomes tighter and tighter and closer and more open, it begins to have more and more effect. But they're not built overnight, and you need to pray. Because when I came back here, I've been here a little over a year now, I didn't have anybody at this level here. I got someone here, and I told you about him, and there's another one that's joined him. And these men have stayed the same, but these here, I left two of them over there in Bonn. Now, we keep writing. We keep, he's a businessman with Procter & Gamble, so he travels, and we met in Atlanta. I was flying, and he was flying. We met in Atlanta, had three of the greatest hours, talked together, we prayed. He was involved in a couple decisions, and I was too. We shared. Boy, right at the bottom line, it was just great. And I said to him, it was John. I said, John, he said, how can I pray for you? And I said, John, just someone who lives in Colorado Springs that I can see him often. I need that kind of relationship. Would you pray? And so I've been looking, I've been praying, I've been trying and developing, and there needs to be a certain chemistry too. You just can't just legislate that. You have to go out, and there needs to be some kind of mix. And so the Lord just sent one in, and it was really exciting. So he just moved in the area. I knew him before, but as we got together, it was just so clear. We began to click, and we've just committed ourselves to a long-range relationship. And when I do that, I actually talk to the guy about this, about a relationship would you like to get into a relationship that means commitment to one another and we'd be accountable? Okay? Yes.
How about relationships with these fellows' wives that we get into that accountable relationship with? How much of a relationship is necessary there socially?
Well, what I would say to that from my own experience, and perhaps some of you might have something to add, is that is a plus if the wives get along well to each other with each other. But and some of these people at that horizontal level, I have a very close relationship with two of them, but our wives just have good relationships, but it's not the same basis at all. They realize our commitment, but it's not a requirement, but it'd be a blessing if it is. Now, the one couple I mentioned, John, his wife is very close to my wife, and so as a couple, we're very close, and it's really a plus. But the other two men, our wives are just good friends and sisters in Christ, but that's all. But it's really wonderful if it is. Some of you might be wondering, how does the wife fit into all this? Now, our wives certainly do, and they perhaps can hold us accountable and help us in many areas that others can't. But as you well know, that relationship, we're not excluding that, but we're saying this is necessary. In addition to that, this is vital because there are some things that go on with men that are really important. For instance, there are some areas of sin that I struggle with that, although I've shared them with my wife, she can't appreciate the depth. And so, for instance, over in Germany, many of you probably traveled in Germany and Frankfurt Airport and all the rest, and they have these sex shops all over. And they're not just some sleazy little thing in the corner. They're just really beautiful right out in the promenades and all the rest. And I've sat there in the having coffee in this one little cafe area in the Frankfurt Airport and other airports. And here's this sex shop. Men as executives with attaché cases go in and out of there. It's just a tremendous temptation. And it's a little bit hard for my wife to understand the depth of temptation that is. For a businessman that travels all the time and all someone who's put in situations, gets lonely and all the rest. And I would think you'd say to me, would you ever go into one of those? I said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But my buddies, knowing men like we do, we pray for each other in that area. One time I'm sitting there and I had a 3-hour layover and I was working on some things. Imagine this. I was working on a message to give, a spiritual, I have my Bible, and I looked over at that sex shop, and my first hour I was saying, gee, can you imagine those guys? Look at them. I mean, they're well-dressed, they're going, and all of a sudden, about the second hour, I thought, I wonder what they're going in there for. I mean, what is all this about? And about the beginning of the third hour, I said to myself, can you imagine this? This is how you with your own rational mind, you cannot defeat sin because it'll always justify it. I said to myself, you know, I probably ought to go in and see what it's all about because I work with men who keep going into there. I mean, that's how far I'd gone. I had rationalized it. But you know what kept me from it? As I sat there, I thought, oh no. Because when I go back in 2 days, I'm going to face Tom and Bob. And that's the first question they're going to ask me. And I'll be darned if I'll tell them that. And I want to be pure. And I know those guys are praying for me. And I didn't do it. And I think it's because of that accountable relationship. Because I could have walked in there and nobody would have known. Nobody would have known. Now, maybe it would have been, you know, I might have, would have met some guy I knew walking out, you know, or something. But basically, nobody would have known. And see, that's the thing about our travel world. We move and go and we keep our own little life and we can live it pretty much by ourselves. So that's why I say these guys really know how to pray for me. Yes. That's exactly, so yours is a comment, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, thank you, because that is a good underscoring. That will not, and you can't force that. And to bring someone in on it where you don't have that relationship, it makes it very difficult. Thanks. Good.
What do you do in a relationship where you've shared something with somebody that you felt you could trust, and he shared it with somebody else that shared it with somebody else, and that third person loved you enough to come back and confront you? What do you do about the person that you shared it in confidence with in the first place?
Okay. That's really good, because what I've done on that case, and I've been involved in some of that, so I've learned the hard way. When I get into a closer relationship, and this thing starts getting closer and closer here, I talk about that very thing, that if we're going to have an accountable relationship, it needs to be totally confidential.
Yeah. It's happened.
Okay. Then I go back to the person that I actually shared it with, and I tell them that very thing. Say that, you know, I shared that as a brother in confidence, and now I've gotten it back. And do you realize what's happened now in our relationship? That's really affected it, and I would like to patch it back up. And I want to ask, you know, and then we could talk about it, and ask him if he's willing to make that commitment. And I would imagine, at least in the one case I was involved with, that he apologized right away. And so we prayed about it together and reestablished it and committed ourselves to confidentiality. But you got to go back and confront it. Thanks.
Here again, you want to beware and not even pass on things like this to your wife. Right? Mm-hmm. That's true, isn't it? If I start sharing things with my wife, it's like exposing something that I shouldn't.
Yeah.
Keep that.
Exactly right. I mean, there are certain things like I'll come home and say, Tom's up for a reassignment, and he really asked me, and these are some of the things he's struggling with. He wouldn't mind. Matter of fact, I'd say, well, I'll share that with Phyllis, and we'll pray. But some of these other areas, exactly. Yes.
Paul, when I see that grid, sometimes I get kind of overwhelmed that perhaps you would suggest, or I've been in other teachings, and I've just come from hearing Swindoll and my family, and I've got 4 children, and I'm thinking about some things that I need to do with my children and some time I need to spend with them. And I think one of the struggles of the Christian life is I should be discipling somebody, I should be being discipled, I should have horizontal accountability relationships. I have a quiet time with my wife in the morning, and often I feel guilty when I go off and have these breakfasts. And I'm not looking for a bailout or for a lack of accountability.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But how do we sort through all these spiritual priorities that sometimes we lay on ourselves? Can you be selective and say, I understand that through the spectrum of my life, but for now, my focus is going to be the disciple. I've got one morning, and I want to devote to that, and it's a matter of, do I get discipled by somebody, or do I disciple, or do I have a horizontal relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Help me with that.
Well, that's a very good point here, because you can struggle with it, and you get all this information. First, let me just tell you that I believe that this is imperative, and it comes over a long period of time. In other words, it could take a year or two to develop that kind of those kind of relationships and get going here. And these people right here could very well be some of your children, you know, in the case that you just mentioned about with the kids. These people don't take a lot of time, but they just need to know that there's that commitment, and they're committed to you. So I find, for instance, the level of counsel up there, it doesn't take a lot of time to keep that relationship up. Where I feel I need it desperately is a couple of these people here. But that, again, doesn't take a time other than getting together, and often we'll do something. If I'm going to play or do something together, like racquetball or something, I might do it with one of them. We'll get a chance to talk and share a little bit to try to minimize my outward commitments. And I would do just what you said, is be more selective and not try to do everything. And that's why right now I'm meeting with one man. That's all. There have been times where I had four or five. But I'm meeting with one man right now, and that's it. And I have a little Sunday school class, which I team teach, and so I don't need to be there all the time. But that vertical or the horizontal is so important to me that I will give time to that, because I realize that checks my inner life. And that's where I'd put the priority, and then a little bit, you know, keeping going there. But it is seasonal, too. There are times where we're overwhelmed with opportunities we need to really sort out, and there are times where we don't have, you know, that pressure coming in on us. Thanks. Yeah. Yes, sir?
In our church, we've, the Board of Elders, tried to pair up a layperson with a member of the pastor and staff and build that kind of relationship. I think pastors probably have the most difficult time doing that, but they're always being called upon where to put out the other.
The vertical, right.
And it's only with somebody who's on the board of elders, an acknowledged equal voice that the eyes of the congregation that they can open up and share with without a great long period of it works.
Mm-hmm.
I think it works in many cases very well.
Well, that's great that your church has initiated that. And I would affirm what you just said. I think if any of you are around any Navigator staff, and a lot of you perhaps are, you could be a buddy to that person. I find a lot of Navigator staff, and I deal with a lot of staff development, and I find that very few of them have a lot of horizontal relationships because they are so involved in the vertical. And it's the same with pastors. And if you've got a pastor, to be a buddy with him and praying, being a Jonathan with him, it could be a tremendous ministry that you would have. And as a matter of fact, I just came from a church where this one man has taken that as a real ministry. And he's really helped that pastor. It's really been great just to be a buddy. Yes, sir.
I'm feeling very pleased with what you've said and what you've done, but I'm also feeling somewhat frustrated because you hit the what, you hit the why, but you're now just getting to the how-to, and I would look to you to give me some insights as to how-tos, which a couple of things have come from here. Is there some basis that it could be encapsulated, now that it's kind of short or otherwise, or something in written material that can give us some how-tos? I accept the what, I accept the why.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I would just say is that, and what with this illustration here, tried to build a little bit into that by giving some of the illustrations I have, and that where I find is just to go to work, first of all, committing ourselves to realizing the need for it, and therefore I'm going to go out and go for it, and I'm going to pray for it. And I start looking for men around that I can do that with. So I start praying for perhaps a man here that I could help, and I start looking here to pray for someone that perhaps I know already, and our personalities, we've done some things, we've clicked. I know that he might be interested. And that's what I did with those two men in Bonn, is I found two other Christian men who were there in the church, and we talked, we seemed to get along, you know, just chatting. They had been over our house and vice versa. And so then I asked them, would they be interested in getting into some kind of accountability relationship and start meeting and helping each other grow? It was a very low commitment, basically. And then it just grew into that. And it grew wider, but of the two men that I started with, only one of them became a Jonathan, and later on another man came in and became that other one, the Tom and the Bob I was talking about. And so Tom and Bob became that. We still had that other Bible study where there was a certain amount of commitment and accountability, but this relationship of those two men was far deeper. And so that's where that went on. And then I look back to the people in my life as I've walked through life so far, and two or three of them came to my mind right away who knew us. We respected them. One was a pastor, one was a businessman, another that, and that's where we asked, I actually met with them and asked them if they would consider being interested in my life, counseling, and playing that role. And I'm sure many of you perhaps would even play that role with somebody else. So that's how it evolved a little bit. Perhaps maybe you have some
thoughts. How about some mines that you can avoid while you're walking down that field, a couple have pointed out here, that would destroy those relationships, so that you would try to avoid?
I think the biggest thing for me is what you brought up here is where on the front end of that relationship, agree with what you want that relationship to do. In other words, where am I going with this relationship? So where we don't talk about it, and we just start getting into it, sometimes it can be dangerous in that you suddenly share something that's a little deeper level than what's been shared before, and you haven't agreed upon confidentiality and that kind of commitment to one another, then they go and share that. So I found that I'm very upfront with that kind of relationship is where, and that would be the biggest one as far as that would be concerned. Yes? Let me see what I understand what you mean. In other words, that one man could be this as well as here. I could see in that relationship, yes. Now that could be so. And in other words, as this one has been developing, growing deeper, and this person obviously has a real gifts and strengths in that area, counseling and a real walk with God and a depth and stability, that you might relate to him more intimately, and also he'd be one of your counselors. Yeah, I could see that. I've also had a situation where I've started with a man here, and he eventually became this to me. And that's been beautiful, because we've gone from a Paul Timothy to more of a Jonathan David, and that's just kind of, I see a couple of heads being nodded, so you've experienced that as well. Yes?
Well, one thing, I just answering what the man was asking, there was one mistake.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That's a good point. And that adds into what Tom was asking about. That'd be one area as well. Just making sure we really keep the standard and the commitment to each other high.
Friendship can begin to take hold.
Very good. Thanks for that emphasis. That's good. Yes?
I think there's a danger, too, in that these relationships take a lot of time. And the more you develop, at least my tendency is the less time I spend with my wife. And I think there's a real danger, and we must keep her relationship above these relationships.
Mm-hmm.
My rule of thumb is I'm not going to commit to any more time with other people unless I'm willing to pursue.
Okay, good. And that's what we're saying here. And particularly if you're the type that seems to attract these kind of relationships, or suddenly you have more than you know what to do with, that's where you need to be selective and hone down. Yes?
Well, you were talking about your group of men in Vaughan, and I was kind of overwhelmed when you said you grew to 11. I've been involved.
They weren't all in this, you know, and I would not conclude them. Only two were. Okay.
Well, then what I was going to say is I was involved with some men for 4 or 5 years, and we had 5 or 6. And it often was very frustrating. An hour sounds like a lot of time. I mean, so often nothing happened. There were just too many. And I was just reviewing this with my wife this morning, coming up here, talking about wanting to reestablish something. And my instinct from that experience is just to do it with one individual and not make it any bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like your wisdom on that, you know, horizontal relationships and accountability.
I mean, can you do it with just one, or should you have more?
If you had some advice on the David-Jonathan relationship, should your attempt and strategy be to just be with one man and keep that just the two of you, or to try to find three or four of you?
Oh, I would go for the former. I pray for one, and if God gives another, then all three of us have to click.
Okay.
So it makes it even more complicated. So I go for one. And the Lord provided in this case too. And that's one thing I would just in picking up to what you were saying, often in the development of this, and this is a practical area, Tom, is that it's important just to say, how do you want me to hold you accountable on that? Asking that question. In other words, somebody just shares something. We sense that we have to hold them accountable to it. But then how do we do it? Do we call them up, or do we bug them, or whatever? So just the question, how would you like me to hold you accountable? Now, I hold, one guy said, who was really sensitive on this, one time told me, he says, well, just back off and pray. And in about 2 weeks, I'll let you know where I am. Now, I had to accept that. And so he did. That we did that very thing. And in 2 weeks, God had been working, and I'd been praying, and he did share what it was, and it was something that he really worked out. So it was a little bit more distant. But accountability doesn't mean necessarily barging in all the time, keeping asking how to go, what to do. But sometimes all he wants is prayer, and just give him a little room on it. He'd like to work it through. So that is a good question, practical question to ask a person. How do you want me to hold you accountable in that? So, well, we've hit our time. I'm certainly available if you want to chat any further, but thanks a lot.